Thank you for the warm welcome, as usual. It's very nice to be here with you all. And you know, I've been traveling around a lot, as usual. But it's nice to come to a place where I can just speak in English. And we don't have to use a translator. Yes. Well, today we're having a continuation of the Sri Krishna Janmashtami festival, which was otherwise, what was it, celebrated on Monday last week. Am I right? Yes, I think it was Monday. Yes, such a wonderful occasion. And it's such a wonderful occasion, it deserves more attention. So, in his wisdom, His Grace Swetha Dweep Prabhu decided we should focus again today on Lord Krishna and his appearance and activities. And then tomorrow, again on Srila Prabhupada. Yes. And then on Monday is Sri Krishna Sri Radha Ashtami, the appearance day of Srimati Radharani. Another just wonderful, wonderful occasion. So we'll be having a special program Monday evening. But for the time being, let us focus here on Lord Krishna, his appearance, his activities, the significance and so on like that of him and his different activities. And to do that, we'll begin by reading a few verses from Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. So, I think we'll begin by reading from chapter 4, Transcendental Knowledge, and we'll read verse 6, because there Lord Krishna explains sort of in principle, you could say, how he appears. Yes, how he appears within this world, and in those terms, how he's very different from us. And because he's so different, Sri Sri Nitai Gaura Sundar Ki. Shishi Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Devi. Yes, so how he's different from us, and why it is then that because of the difference, why we take him so much more seriously than we take ourselves. Of course, we take ourselves seriously, but on a deeper level of significance. So, yes, let's begin with chapter 4, verse 6. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
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 Chapter 4, verse 6. Ajopisan avyayatma bhutanam ishvaropisan prakritim swam adishtaya sambhavam yatma mayaya. Translation. Although I am unborn and my transcendental body never deteriorates, and although I am the Lord of all living entities, by my internal energy, I still appear in every millennium in my original transcendental form. So let's see here. Well, let's just say a few words about this. Yes, so Krishna appeared in this world 5,000 years ago, give or take some. But here we are now in 2018, celebrating in really quite a grand way the festival of his appearance or his birth in many places all around the world. I don't expect that in 5,000 or so years from now, our birthdays are going to be celebrated on this sort of scale. Not that I'm sort of trying to denigrate or minimize any of you, because you're all very nice. Actually, you're all very nice and very nice. So, but still, we're just not that nice or not that special as Lord Krishna is. Even some extremely influential person amongst the general populace, you know, like Nelson Mandela, like Mahatma Gandhi. We just came back from Russia yesterday. Lenin. Yeah. You know, you think Mahatma Gandhi is sort of taken seriously in India, you should see Lenin in Russia. All over, just all over, every single town at least, in the center is Lenin. So anyway, these people and various others here and there, they're all taken very seriously and, you know, quite some years, 100 years or 150, whatever it may be, after their births are still celebrated and people gather and say nice things, etc. It's going on. But still, I don't expect after 5,000 years that Lenin or Gandhi or Mandela, whoever, that they're going to be, their birthdays are going to be celebrated and people are going to be crowding up and saying all sorts of things. At least that's, I don't expect it. Yeah, I really don't expect it at all. And that's because Krishna is just in such a different category. Such a different category. And certain aspects, certain elements of the picture, how he's in a different category from us, or even the most prominent people of this world, is pointed out here. An important part of it, that Krishna, when he appears in this world, then he appears in his original form. And he stays here in his original form, and then he departs in his original form. Yes, so Krishna was here for 125 years or so, about 5,000 years ago, doing so many things, interacting with people, and he was doing it in his original form. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Kamcha. Hare Krishna. What do you say? Beso. Beso. Okay, right. So Krishna came to this world. We have come to this world. But he came in his original form. We didn't. And he stayed for all the time he was here in his original form. And all the time we've been here, we've been in many different forms, all sorts of different forms. Even actually, we understand we've been in all species of life, 8,400,000. And of course, it's not quite so cut and dried that just 8,400,000. There are sort of subsets and subspecies and all sorts of variations within the species. Yeah. And we have probably, at least we've been through so many, some fantastic number of different bodies. Yeah. In the time that we've been here. But Krishna, he came, and all the time he was here, he was in his original form, his original transcendental form. You know, Krishna comes, when Krishna comes, he's called Avatar. When we came, Avatar in the sense of us actually coming into this world, we came into this world, but we are not avatars. Avatar means one who descends. We are people who have fallen. Of course, falling is a certain type of descending, I suppose. But more, you know, strictly speaking, descending means in a sort of cultured, nice way, like you come down the stairs, you can descend. But if you fall down the stairs, that's a different story. You get hurt. And sure, it's very sort of destabilizing. So that's a big difference right from the outset. That Krishna descends very nicely in a cultured, very decent type of way. But we fell, and, you know, when we fell, we got these bodies on entering this world. And immediately we just forgot who we really are and how we got here and what we're meant to do here. All these types of very essential points were just lost to us. And we found we had whatever body we had at that time, the first time. And then we just accepted, oh, all right. Let me live in terms of this body, male, female, whatever it may be. Just accept the conditions into which we're placed. Therefore, we're called conditioned souls. Conditioned means that you have accepted the conditions. Yes, you have accepted the conditions of whatever the situation is, then you're conditioned. So we're conditioned souls. And in terms of mission, our mission in life, at that time, well, we had no idea what's our mission, what we should be doing. And we just accepted the business of that particular body. Actually, Srila Prabhupada explains in the 9th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam that when the living being first enters this material world, the first birth is as a Lord Brahma. Creator or engineer and manager of a universe. So we are, so to speak, we are sort of like a Lord Brahma old boys club and old girls. Something like that. That's what we are. Yes. The alma mater. was as a Lord brother. So, but despite that, despite being more or less the number one person within a particular material universe and controlling it and managing it in ways which are so inconceivably beyond our capacity to comprehend now, despite that, we have ended up here now. And it's the same situation. We don't know how we got here, but we're here, so let's just make the most of it. Let's just live in terms of where we are. Be here now, as someone said. Be here now. So, but Krishna, when he came, it was very different. It was very different. Actually, in the previous verse, I was even thinking of reading the previous verse, and in fact, I will. I'll read the translation. Lord Krishna says, many, many births both you and I have passed. I can remember all of them, but you cannot. O subduer of the enemy, Arjuna. Yeah. So there are many differences. This is one we were talking about. How we have appeared and how Krishna appears. And what his body is like when he comes. And what our bodies are like when we have come. Such a great difference. There's another one in the immediate previous verse, chapter 4, verse 5. Krishna remembers all the many times he's come to this world. We can't remember any, generally, of our previous appearances. You know, sometimes you read about people who somehow they have recollections of a previous lifetime. Perhaps you've read about such phenomena. But it's not common. And usually it's more like sort of glimpses and ideas than something, certainly not as concrete as how we are conscious in this lifetime. But even then, taking that, well, Krishna later on in Bhagavad Gita, if I remember correctly, in verse 8, Krishna says, Vedaham samati tarani, vartamaranani charjuna, bhavishyani chabutani, mam tu vedana kaschana. I know everything that has happened in the past. I know everything that is happening at present. I also know everything, all things that are yet to come. And I also know all living beings. But mam tu veda na. But me, nobody knows. Yeah. So Krishna, in terms of his awareness, his consciousness, his intelligence, is just in another dimension altogether, completely. We, after all, just consider this. What to speak of remembering our immediate previous life, and what to speak of remembering our so many previous lifetimes? What to speak of all that? We can't even remember so much about this lifetime. You know, I've been sitting here talking away for the last, 15 minutes or so. Who can remember exactly what I've said? You know, I can't even remember. So, who can remember what they were doing at, 5:30 or so on the 15th of September 2017. No one probably has even like a rough idea. You know, at the very best, Prabhupada discusses it in one of the purports, we would have to dredge our memories. Dredge. You know what dredges do in rivers. Hare Krishna, ladies. Welcome.
Maybe a little more Prabhu's?
Yes, yes.
Not like any other Sadhguru will come back. That other devotees can come out.
Hare Krishna. Dredges. You know, dredges, they're mechanized sort of boats, which, you know, they've got great digging apparatuses, and they go down to the bottom usually of a river and take out all sorts of the muck from the bottom. It's quite an operation. So dredge our minds, go right in and try and take something out from the past. It's very difficult. Krishna in the previous verse said, which we read, many, many births both you and I have passed. So we all know, of course, very well that in Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna presents the philosophy of reincarnation. We've all been in many different bodies. But like we said, we are so prone to forgetfulness. We are so prone to forgetfulness. What verse am I reading right now?
4:5, chapter 4.
Okay, not bad. You had to think though, didn't you? Yeah. It's actually 4:6, really. But anyway, 4:5 also. Yeah. So reincarnation. However many people, don't accept reincarnation. They think this is our one lifetime. Before it started some number of years ago, there was no us. And when it finishes after some further years, we will cease to exist. So many people think like that. And therefore, when the idea of reincarnation is presented, then those people, they all try to dismiss it and they won't take it seriously. But in many cases, because they can't remember a previous lifetime. Like we said, you do get some people occasionally, I think they're really pretty rare, but they have some idea of perhaps having had a previous lifetime, but it's rare. Yeah, so we don't remember, even in this lifetime, there's so many things. We're really kind of locked into the present in many ways. And so prone to forget the past. So for those people who feel that there must not have been a previous lifetime because we can't remember it, and that's sort of like a proof, the fact that we can't remember a previous lifetime is meant to be a proof there wasn't a previous lifetime. But we can say to them, we can ask them, do you remember being in your mother's womb? And, you know, even the people who feel they can remember something about a previous lifetime, I've not heard of people feeling that they can remember being in their mother's womb so much. Can you, young ladies, can you remember being in mummy's womb? Can't? Not? And you were there quite recently, compared to people like me, or many of us. And they can't remember after, how old are you now? 7 and 10, was it? 11, excuse me. Yeah. So, yes, but if you feel that being able to remember or not being able to remember constitutes some form of proof, then what you need to do, though, is ask your mother if she remembers if you were in her womb or not. What do you think?
We actually had this conversation this morning. She asked how long was she in my tummy for.
Really? Interesting. Okay.
She likes to know about that.
Okay. Good. Important point. Yeah. So, but Krishna remembers not just some sort of vague idea. Krishna remembers vividly, clearly, in detail. Even he can give a moment by moment, second by second, blow by blow, sort of, you know, he can recount in detail every single day of all of his different appearances. Sure, that's a different type of consciousness to what we have. And therefore we worship Krishna. Therefore we take Krishna very seriously. And in a certain sense, we don't take ourselves so seriously, because at least in material terms, who we are calling our us now is not really us. It's another person, false identity, just the identity of this body in this lifetime, but it's not really us. You know, like in your previous lifetime, in the fourth canto of the Bhagavatam, there's the story of King Paranjan. King Paranjan, he's actually sort of a made-up person, allegorical type of person, fictitious, just to illustrate some philosophical points. But Paranjan, King Paranjan, he had a wife, and he was extremely attached, devoted, or let us just say attached, to his wife. He was just sort of following her around all day, every day, and just obsessed, really obsessed by his wife. And you know what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, that whatever you're thinking about, particularly at the time of death, but you'll be born in that type of body in your next life. So in his next life, Paranjan was born as Paranjani, means a female. Yeah. And Prabhupada there describes that in so many cases, people, and not just people, but living beings, as they go through their lives, in so many cases, their main interest is their spouse or partner in life, a member of the opposite sex. In so many cases, even though they may have, you know, they're interested also in eating, they have other interests also, but in so many cases, the main interest is the spouse. And Prabhupada explains that as a result, in the next life, usually, or in so, like really many cases, they take birth in that sex, in the next life. And then in that life, they're very attached to their spouse, which is now the other sex. And then they take birth in that other sex in the following life. And Prabhupada explains it tends to be like a sort of zigzag process from one lifetime to another, from male to female to male to female to male to female. So any of you wonderful devotees here, or yeah, any of us sitting here, it is very likely at least that in our previous lifetimes, we were in the opposite sex to what we are now. Hari Bol. Interesting. Yeah. But if someone now showed you a photograph of your previous body and said, look, this is you in your previous life, you might, you know, if you didn't understand how these things work, you would probably think that this is just nonsense. This is another person. It's not me, it's another person, because this is me now in this lifetime. This is me. But that was probably you, actually. So, anyway, yes, this is the situation with the conditioned souls in this world, but Krishna is in a very different type of situation. He's omniscient. Omniscient, including past, present, and future. And omnipotent. And when he comes in completely different ways to we, you know, descends as opposed to falling. And then he lives for the time he's here in his original body, which is spiritual, eternal, full of knowledge, fully conscious, and fully blissful. But not us, devotees, am I right? I'm looking at some of you as we're sitting here. Some are falling asleep. I think I should tell a joke. I mean, I'm not criticizing, I'm just saying it happens. It's happened to me too. So, yeah. But Krishna, his consciousness and his experience is so different. His bliss, his happiness is so different from our happiness. Particularly after you've been sitting here for the next couple of hours. See, he's already had to shift his position after 15 minutes. Because these bodies are just not very blissful. You know, there's a hellish planet. I was reading actually some time ago. For people who are like gluttonous, yeah, like avid eaters, there's a planet, and you know, they eat all sorts of wrong things. There's a planet where a person gets a big body that needs to, just to survive, needs to eat a lot. But their body has a tiny little mouth. Like that. Tiny little mouth. And so just to stay alive only, they have to eat 24 hours a day. Otherwise they die of starvation. It's a hard life in this material world. So Krishna is really, his appearance, his activities, his nature is so different from ours. And therefore we worship him. And not only worship him, but 5,000 years later, we're still celebrating his birthday in a grand, on a grand scale. And here in PE, we're celebrating it, what is it? It's 10 days afterwards, isn't it? Or something like that, 10, 11 days afterwards. We're having a second celebration. So this is Krishna, a very special person. And it's not just a matter of saying, well, he's God. But there's a more detailed understanding of who he is, what he is, how he functions, how he can function, which just makes it clear that he is worthy of special attention. Not just worthy, but we must. We must give him special attention. Yeah. I'm going to read another couple of verses. I'm going to do a time check, actually. Okay. Well, I'm going to read the next verse. I'm going to read 7, 8, and 9. These are more about... 5 and 6 were about how he appears. In what sort of, like, the way he appears. What sort of condition he is in when he appears. What is his state of being? What are his capabilities? Now, 7 and 8 particularly discuss why he appears in this world. For what reasons? And then 9 explains the value of and the result, the effect of understanding these things. So let's read 7 and 8 first. Yada yada hi dharmasya glani arbhavati bharata abhyutanam adharmasya tadatmanam sri jamyaham. Whenever and wherever there is a decline in religious practice, O descendant of Bharat, and a predominant rise of irreligion, at that time I descend myself. So whenever and wherever there's a decline in religious practice and a predominant rise of irreligion, Krishna says at that time and in that place, he descends himself. One interesting sort of little technical point is that Krishna, what Prabhupada has translated as religion, the Sanskrit word, and irreligion, those words are dharma and adharma. Prabhupada's translated as religion and irreligion. So, you know, that's just in sort of Sanskrit language terms. Those are sort of, you know, not unusual, quite fairly normal ways of translating those two words, religion, irreligion. But there's also a deeper sense to it. Dharma, according to just the Sanskrit language, dharma can be applied in terms of religion, but in a broader and deeper sense, dharma can be taken and is even, it would be more proper to take it as not simply religion, but the nature of someone or something, the dharma of a person or the dharma of a material thing, is its nature. And when it's translated as religion, it doesn't just mean in the ceremonial, ritualistic, formal sense, but it means religion in the sense that we're all the eternal servants of Krishna. That's what we actually are. We're not something else. That is what we actually are. And when we live like that, in those terms, when we live in terms of our natures as eternal servants of Krishna, that's dharma. That's religion. Not just you have your religion, I'll have mine, and Hemant Bhai will have his, and we'll just have our religions as we feel we want. But religion means to live according to what you are. which is an eternal servant of God. Yeah. But the term dharma is used, and Prabhupada talks about this, in that broader sense of the nature of something. Prabhupada gives the example that Prabhupada asks the question, what is the dharma of water? Meaning, its nature. What is it? And in simple terms, it is a clear, tasteless liquid. So if you freeze it, it becomes ice. Then we don't talk about it as water. Then we say, well, here we have some ice. If you boil it, it becomes steam. And then you don't say, well, here's the water, you know, the water's going up. You say, well, there's the steam. And we no longer refer to it as water. Even though, you know, obviously they're transformations of water. But what we refer to as water is that clear, tasteless liquid. H2O. That's water. So the dharma, the nature of water, is to be a clear, tasteless liquid. Or Prabhupada even asked, it could sound like a trick question, what is the dharma of the color red? As our friend here, well, it's not quite red, is it? It's almost maroon or something. Is it red? Okay, what's the dharma, nature? Like the natural sort of state of existence of the color red. Like I said, it could be a bit of a trick question. The dharma, Prabhupada said, of the color red is its redness. Hari Bol. Too sophisticated a question. That's the dharma. Bring in a chair. There are chairs there. Right, okay, dharma. So here Krishna uses the term dharma, religion, and adharma, irreligion, whenever there's a decline in these things. But in a sort of more precise sense, what he's saying is that when people, when there's a decline of people, in terms of people living according to their actual nature as eternal servants of the Lord, of Him, and an increase in their living in some other way, like they're not servants of Him, like they're independent enjoyers, basically, of this world, then at that time He descends Himself, whenever and wherever. You know, generally we would understand that to mean a fairly drastic decline in religious practice and a fairly drastic increase in irreligious practice activity. Not just that if one of the devotees fails to finish their 16 rounds, they only do 15, then Krishna may appear. It has to be something big, really big. And then the Lord may appear Himself, something like that may threaten the existence of the planet or the species or something. You know, you get nowadays, you get all these superhero movies. When I was young, we had Batman. Yeah, I used to go to the movies when I was like under 10. Every Saturday we'd go to the matinee. There was no TV. And they had a Batman serial. Yeah. That was as far as the superhero thing went. all the others, whoever they are, they didn't have. But now they have. And, you know, not that I'm an expert at all on the subject, but as I understand, usually the superheroes get into action when it's sort of a situation like the whole world is being threatened. Humanity or something along those lines. Am I right? Some of you know about these things. This is what we hear. Yeah, you get all these superheroes, and what do? Well, they come to just save the world. Yeah. Which actually Krishna does when the situation is really like that. So who are these Superman and whoever the rest of them are? They are substitutes for Krishna. Yeah. Instead of just making Krishna the hero in the superhero movies who saves the world, they put Superman in. Or who are some other superheroes?
Spider-Man.
Who else?
Batman. The Incredible Hulk.
Oh, the Incredible Hulk? Batman, I hear Batman sort of, when I was young, anyway, he wasn't so, you know, dynamic as I've heard he is now. Anyway, whoever the people are, I'm sure they'll dream up some new ones too. Yeah. But they're just substitutes for Krishna, saving the world. Krishna comes to save the world. But when it needs to actually be saved, and the essence of it needing to be saved is that people give up dharma in the sense of living as eternal servants of the Lord, and they get deeply into some other program of trying to live independently and do all sorts of heavy, heavy things. But you must know, Krishna only comes when it really gets serious. When Adolf Hitler was around, Krishna didn't come. It wasn't serious enough. Stalin, Krishna didn't come. Wasn't bad enough. It's got to be worse. Yeah. Krishna came 5,000 years ago. Kamsa was ruling the world, actually. And Kamsa had defeated Indra in battle. So in other words, Kamsa, as we read about him in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, he's not just some wild, rebellious, atheist king. He is someone who was capable of controlling the universe, because he had defeated Indra, who is the head of the demigods, who are controlling the functions of the universe. Then Krishna appeared, and Krishna killed Kamsa. So, yeah, okay, let's go on to verse 8. Paritra naya sadunam vinashaya chaduskritam dharma samstapanartaya sambhavami yuge yuge. To deliver the pious and to annihilate the miscreants, as well as to re-establish the principles of religion, I myself appear millennium after millennium. Krishna, yeah, he keeps coming. You know, I heard, you know what I heard? I'll tell you what I heard. I heard Superman died. Is it true? Good night, Superman. But it doesn't happen to Krishna. They probably had to write him out of the movie, edit him out or something. All right, anyway, let's not deal with that any further. But here, this is very interesting, and it's a little different or a little deeper. Krishna gives three reasons why he appears in this world. Previously, he said, decline in religion, increase in irreligion. It's one thing, really. It's just a balance getting off balance. Religion and irreligion, their relationship gets thrown out. So it's kind of like just one thing. But here there are three very specific types of happenings and situations which stimulate the Lord to such a point that he feels, I must appear, and he does appear. Three things. He wants to deliver the pious. The word for pious in the Sanskrit is sadhu. Sadhu nam. Sadhu means the saintly people, the sadhus, which ultimately means the devotees. Then to annihilate the miscreants, the duskritam, duskritinas. Krita in Sanskrit means value. Dushkrita means bad value. I mean value in the sense of some sort of significance. Not a financial value, something like that, but some significance. So, like intelligence, krita, to have intelligence, this is a type of krita or value. But it can be sukrita or duskrita, intelligence. It can be a value which is used positively or negatively. Prabhupada gives an interesting example. Duskritana, someone who has intelligence, which is of value, but of a bad type. A criminal, a thief, is outside the house of the rich man, using his intelligence. How can I get in to steal? If he didn't have that intelligence, there'd just be no question of being able to do it. But often they do, because they have intelligence, which is of value, but it's of a bad type. And Prabhupada said, in the building, the rich man, he also has intelligence, and he's trying to use that intelligence to keep the robbers out. So it's more like a good use. So it's sukrita. Yeah. You follow the idea? Yeah. A knife can be used by a surgeon to save someone's life, or it can be used to just kill someone by a criminal. So it's just something of value, and it depends how it's used. Okay, so but now these are the duskritanas. They have intelligence and or power, but they're using it for bad purposes. And Krishna says he annihilates them. And the word for annihilate or destroy is vinash. Vinash. Strictly speaking, according to Sanskrit grammar, the word for destroy is nash. That's the word for destroy, nash. Sarva papa vinashanam. The Lord can destroy all your sinful reactions. Anyway, nash means to destroy. V as a grammatical prefix. V means very. So Krishna says, what does he say? Vinashaya cha duskritam. He destroys the bad people. Means like this, super bad people. But he doesn't just nash, he vinashes. He very destroys them. He just, you know, obliterates them. Wow. Just, you know, amazing. Like, for example, actually, this may not be for the weak of heart, so, but let me tell you anyway. In the third or fourth canto of the Bhagavatam, I think it's the third, I think it's Kapila is explaining how the Lord has a club. You know, he's got a lotus, he's got a disc, he's got a club, and what else has he got? A conch. He's got a conch. The disc is for the demons to kill them, and the club also. The lotus and the conch are for the devotees to encourage them. So there it's described how the Lord, sometimes he beats the demons with the club and kills them. And there it's described that because these people are just anti him, but even worse, they're anti his devotees and like abusive towards the devotees. He, because he has feelings, he's a person, he's not just like a thing. So he really feels. He dislikes that intensely. So there Prabhupada explains that sometimes when he kills a demon with his club, usually just one whack is enough. Good night, demon, whoever it is. But because Krishna feels so strongly about it, sometimes, even though he has killed the demon, sometimes he keeps beating them with the club. Yeah. For example, in the 10th canto, Krishna kills Aristasura, and after he's killed him, he kicks the dead body repeatedly until it becomes like a lump of jelly. Just a big, big, sort of unidentifiable mass of matter. Sorry if that put you off your prasadam. And then, so, you know, sometimes he just whacks them repeatedly, even after they're already dead. And so then he takes the club, which has the blood of the now deceased demon on it. But sometimes he doesn't wash the blood off the club. He keeps it on so that when he gets into a certain mood, he can take out the club and look at it and see, ah, yes, that was the blood of some demon. Hare Krishna. Okay. Anyway, it's okay. All right. And then third, so that was two. Deliver the devotees. Annihilate the miscreants. Reestablish the principles of religion. So here's a question, devotees. Here's a question. Which of these three do you think is the main? Or is there a main one? Or if there is, which one? Any suggestions?
Reestablish the religion.
Reestablish the principles of religion. He's saying it is the main reason. Any other offers? Well, let me just say, what a nice suggestion. Just wonderful. But it's not correct. Any other offers?
Annihilate the miscreants.
Another fantastic, fantastic suggestion. We love it. Well, there's only one thing. This Prabhupada discusses this. I was actually, just before we came here a couple of hours ago, going through some statements of Prabhupada about why Krishna appears. And Prabhupada repeatedly makes the point that it's for the devotees. And not necessarily deliver in the sense of save their lives or deliver them from some dangerous situation, but deliver in a broader sense that the devotees in this world, you know what it's like. Oh, it's a tough place. It's a tough place. And so many of the devotees are feeling, oh, I wish I could be with Krishna. I wish I could see Krishna. When will I again be reunited with my Lord? Yeah. So when sincere devotees feel like that, Krishna feels obliged. He has to come because they're his devotees. He cannot be sort of nonchalant and don't care about it. He has to come. But otherwise, the other two reasons, annihilate the demons and reestablish principles of religion, it doesn't necessitate that Krishna must appear. Otherwise, these things cannot happen. Annihilate the miscreants. You know, the miscreants, usually in due course, they annihilate each other. Yeah. Usually they annihilate each other. Yeah. You know, Hitler got annihilated. Mussolini got annihilated. Stalin. Well, anyway, it's a slightly different story. And where they don't annihilate each other, time annihilates them. Idi Amin apparently died in as a, what would you say, what do they call it? A, someone who's gone to another country to avoid
an exile.
He died in exile in Saudi Arabia, was it? Or somewhere like that, somewhere in the Middle East.
Saudi Arabia.
Was it? Yeah. Living in luxury. Having, well, I'm sure you're familiar with the story of Idi Amin. Yeah. Having really given a lot of people a really hard time. So, you know, his enemies couldn't get to him, but time got to him. And when time came for him, then he couldn't escape. Yeah. You know, Prabhupada said about Gandhi. Gandhi in his day in India was so extremely popular and highly thought of. But Prabhupada made the point, when death came, he couldn't say, listen, I'm Mahatma Gandhi. So, you know, thanks for your interest, but you can go elsewhere, thank you. And then off goes death to someone else. Prabhupada, the way Prabhupada put it was that when his time came, when Gandhi's time came, death came and threw him away, just thrown away. And not more ceremoniously, really, than even some pauper in the street who just expires in the gutter. Death just threw him away without fanfare. So, and you know that story. I don't know if we've got time. You know the story about the man who met death? It's actually based on, there's a materialistic, a short story, I forget the name. The Horseman of something or other. There was, devotees, listen to this. There was in P.E. I'm adapting it a bit. Newton Park area, or somewhere not too far away. A very rich man, as we say in Chatsworth, a big larny. And the big larny, he had an assistant, a gopher, who would go for different things. Go get me this, go get me that. So one day he sent his assistant to the supermarket. Is it a Checkers or Pick and Pay up in Green Acres? Okay, let's say ShopRite for argument's sake. So, okay, go up to the ShopRite and get something. So he did. It was Friday afternoon. So he went up, he's moving around trying to find whatever it was in the ShopRite. And then he bumped into someone, you know, a little suddenly, and they both spun around and looked at each other. And he looked at this person he bumped into, and it was death. The personality of death. Death personified. And death looked at him, and death, you know, is a very shocking looking person. So the assistant was just sort of mesmerized, and death's just looking at him. And death made the strange expression, which just shocked him back into his senses, and he ran. The assistant ran back to his boss in Newton Park area and said, "Listen, you won't believe this. I just met death. It was so shocking and horrible." And then, you know, we're looking at each other. Suddenly makes this horrible face at me. It was even worse. So I can't take it anymore. I'm getting out of here. I am going to my brother's place in Malabar. And I am going to hide under the bed in the spare room on the second floor in my brother's place for the weekend, because it was too much seeing death. I can't handle it. And off he went. And the big Lani, he was really unhappy, so he thought, let me go down to the ShopRite in Green Acres, and I'll find death, and I'll tell him what I think. So he did. He went down, and sure enough, he found death. Still in the shop, right? In the butchery section. Anyway, well, that's by the way. So he found him and he just walked up to him. He said, "Hey you, what do you think you're doing? You frightened my assistant. Why did you do that? And then you made this very strange, menacing expression at him." And he just couldn't take it. He just sort of freaked out. "Why you do things like that?" And Death said, "Well, okay, I'm sorry about that. But the thing is this. The reason I made this strange expression was because I was so surprised to see him here in the ShopRite in Green Acres. Because I have an appointment with him tomorrow under the bed in the spare room on the second floor of his brother's house in Malabar." It's a famous story, by the way. It's the horsemen of something or other. I forget. That's a good point, isn't it? Okay, so yeah, we were talking about the miscreants destroying them. Either they destroy each other, or time destroys them, but they're all destroyed in due course. And the fact that Krishna, if Krishna doesn't come, it doesn't mean that they're not going to be destroyed. Unless Krishna comes, you know, whoever's the greatest demoniac politician of today. If Krishna doesn't come, he'll never die. whoever it is. No, he will die. So it doesn't need Krishna to come. Although he does come and do it sometimes. But if he doesn't come, it will be done anyway. And similarly with reestablishing the principles of religion. It's not an absolute necessity that Krishna must come. When religious principles are deteriorated, and if he doesn't come, they're not going to pick up. No. Prabhupada came. Prabhupada came. And with so many millions of people, their religious standards had gone down, and particularly the Westerners, they were just in a terrible state. But by Prabhupada's influence, they got picked up. Millions. Millions. So, and you know, Prabhupada's not the only example of that. So, it's not that if Krishna doesn't come when religious principles are deteriorated, that it will not be possible to pick them up and improve them and religion to become established nicely again. Krishna doesn't have to come to do that, otherwise it can't happen. But to inspire the devotees and give his association to the devotees and interact with the devotees, Krishna has to do that. He's the only one that, who can. Because he's the one they want. And therefore, the main reason then that Krishna comes is to help the devotees, to help them, to save them, to help them, to inspire them. Yeah, that's the main reason that Lord Krishna comes. And now, of course, in Kali Yuga, well, you could always say that, well, Krishna's not here. But in Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's famous verse, Kali Kale Nama Rupe Krishna Avatar. In the Kali Yuga, the avatar, the form of Krishna who descends to this world, is Nama Rupa. The Lord in the form of his name or names. And so we experience right now, even here in PE, yeah, which is colder than Siberia right now, because we were there a few days ago. We were there for Janmashtami, actually, and Prabhupada's Vyasa Puja. Yes. And it's colder in PE. Anyway, winter hasn't started in Siberia yet, don't worry. They say in Siberia, 9 months of the year, it's cold. The other 3 months, it's very cold. And if you ever want to experience minus 40, just go there. Yes. So, yeah. So Krishna, the devotees are very attached to Krishna and they really want Krishna's mercy. They want his association. You know, George Harrison sang that song. My sweet Lord, I really want to see you. I'm sure you've heard it. That was 1970, I think, before I was a devotee. It was Top of the Pops, and I was a big fan, and my mother loved that song. And Srila Prabhupada said about that song, this is a song in separation from Krishna in the mood of Sanatan Goswami, which means very deep spiritual mood, Prabhupada said about that song. So the devotees feel like that. And Krishna feels, like we mentioned, that Krishna feels when the devotees are abused. And he feels towards the abusers. He feels so strongly. He may just obliterate them. Because he, just as an expression of how he feels. So the devotees feel for Krishna, and Krishna feels for the devotees. And on the basis of this reciprocal relationship of feeling, relationship, so there's contact between the Lord and his devotees. Even here in PE. Yeah. So Hare Krishna. Sri Krishna Janmashtami Mahotsava Ki. César, et de me. Oui? Okay. Okay. Any comment or question? Because you know what they told me? They told me that the devotees here in PE, what did they say? They're very intelligent. And they really think deeply. And therefore they have many questions. So Sweta Dweep Prabhu, the patron saint of PE, he's saying like that. Question, comment? Don't play humble. Are you playing humble?
I'd like to ask a question.
Yes?
When Krishna appears in the earthly planet, what happens to the other planetary systems? Do they also feel the presence of Krishna?
Not necessarily. The demigods know that Krishna's here, and many of them come when he's here. But like particularly lower planetary systems, they wouldn't be aware. Life just goes on. Lord Chaitanya is Krishna. He was here 500 years ago. You know, you go through the histories of India. He appears in the histories of India. He's a historical personality as a devotee, but not as the Supreme Lord. So they didn't really feel his... I mean, other than those he interacted with, and, you know, he did interact significantly, but otherwise a lot of people on the planet, they weren't aware. You know, someone told me a few years ago, that, you know, at that time, 500 years ago, if I remember correctly, the Portuguese were somewhat active in some parts of India. And someone was saying, in some Portuguese sort of historical documents, there's mention of Lord Chaitanya. Yeah. But as a devotee, I mean, he's a well-known historical character, particularly in Bengal, Bengal Orissa. Extremely well-known. It's not like, you know, Jesus in the Middle East, other than the New Testament, those books, there's very little mention, no really substantial mention as a historical, like, you could say, objective historical personality. But Lord Chaitanya, it's not just like the books by the devotees that talk about him. Just, you know, Bengali historical books talk a lot about Lord Chaitanya for that time because he was very influential politically. If none of you have any further questions, which is okay. Let me tell you a little story related to Arti, because we're going to have Arti now. And in Arti, we will ring the bell. So Krishna, when he was young, and he was in his butter thief phase of life, so to speak, he would sneak into people's butter storehouses and steal the butter. So they took up the practice of suspending the butter pots from the ceiling. So, you know, so it's much less accessible. So, and Krishna would have to somehow or other put some things on top of each other to climb up and reach up there. So one day Krishna did that. And there's this pot of butter, and he's right up next to it. But it's got bells on it. And Krishna's worried, if I steal, put my hand in and steal, the pot's going to move, the bells are going to ring, and the people will come and I'll be caught. And so Krishna spoke to the bells. He said, bells, I am going to steal some butter. Please don't ring. If you don't ring, I will be your best friend. Okay, so don't ring. And the bells replied, okay, steal the butter, we will not ring. So Krishna stole some butter. And while he's up there, he decided to eat some of it. So he started eating, and the bells rang. And Krishna said to the bells, what are you doing? You promised you wouldn't ring. And the bells said, yeah, we didn't ring. We didn't ring while you were stealing the butter. But when God eats, you have to ring a bell. So when you hit, we had to ring and we rang. And that's the end of the story. Sri Krishna Janmashtami Mahotsava Ki. Sri Krishna Janmashtami Mahotsava Ki. Sri Krishna Janmashtami Mahotsava Ki. Go Premanandi. So, Arti. Yes.